On tonight's Radio File, we're going to hear what a number of people have to say about credit and privacy.
The record has substituted for face-to-face relationship, which used to determine the potential and the direction of your life.
We don't feel it is right for anyone to be able to check on anybody else's credit just for the sake of checking, or if they are extending credit to them, they should take the time to actually sit down with the people and take their own financial information and a financial statement and find out who they are rather than just issuing the credit and then worrying about it later.
It's the person who complains the most is the one that's going to rip somebody off anyhow. If a guy comes into a store and says, you know, I want to cash his check, and the gal goes, okay, and then she goes through everything, and then she gets up to the point where she takes a picture, the fella usually, you know, starts ranting and raving, saying, what are you going to do, take my picture? Cripe's sake, what kind of chip joint is this? And where's the manager and all this? Well, at that point, you immediately know he's got something to hide.
My dearest friend Fritzy is out of his wits. He asks for starving children to feed. But me, I'm sitting pretty. I've got all the money I need. I know my little cousin Eric is as credit is hysterical, and also cousin Emma at the pawn his mother's Emma, and my sister and brother took to hawking one another too. But I've got some talents which build up my balance, so even my bankers agree. That me, I'm sitting pretty. I've got all the money I need.
It seems funny to me that so many people today, I think, are attaching so much importance upon their invasion of privacy. Basically, if a person is basically honest, what difference does it make if anyone knows their name and their social security number? We've got to face it. We are all numbers today. Names mean nothing.
I suppose if you're going to have a checking account, you're going to have to put up with something.
Taking your picture to cash a check? I think it's terrible.
Why is that?
Because that's not the point of checks. It's, you know, you shouldn't have to sign your life away to write a check.
Don't you feel that the banks have a right to protect themselves, though?
Oh, yeah, so do the businesses. But if they want to protect themselves, don't offer the service.
Money makes the world go around, the world go around, the world go around. Money makes the world go around, it makes the world go around. A yen, a buck, or a pound, a mark, or a pound, a buck, or a pound is all that makes the world go round. That clinking, clanking sound can make the world go round. Money, 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 money.
Companies exist for over 25 years who do impersonate physicians and nurses and even a cleric, and that's how they obtain the information.
The Stieber family of Clay, New York, suddenly found their credit ruined temporarily. Local stores would no longer allow them to charge items. Then a local credit agency found out why. The Stiebers neglected to pay a $17 fine for not licensing the family dog. Mrs. Stieber says she found that incident particularly frustrating because the Stiebers did not own a dog at the time. And in other news this evening, the Democratic National Committee said that candidates for the 19... This is Radiophile, a weekly program of reports and features focusing on issues concerning our community. Here's your host, Marge Halperin.
Good evening. The Stieber family saw one example of the types of errors that occur daily as a result of the mishandling of personal records. In this example, it was credit records, although many times employment, medical, and insurance records are misinterpreted so as to work against an individual. The Privacy Act of 1974 provided for the Federal Privacy Protection Commission to investigate the abuses of our privacy through such records. Next week, we'll hear details of 2 years' testimony before that commission from the chairperson, Professor David Linos. But tonight, we're going to examine the day-to-day influences on your records.
Do you know what kind of information your bank has in your credit file?
No, I don't. It's kind of scary, I understand, because they have all sorts of information that we really don't know about. But I understand you could check it, but I don't think anyone hardly ever does, you know.
I know some. Right now, I live in the state of Washington, and my bank is in Waukegan. And I know just about all the information they have.
No, I'd like to find out.
That I don't know, but I read a couple articles in the Tribune about that, and I'd like to find out.
I hope it's got everything. That way I can go and get a loan anytime I feel like it.
First, Mona Marinowski talks with George Giese, the head cashier at DeKalb Bank.
When a checking account or a savings account is opened, we, of course, establish whether it is a joint account or an individual account and who is authorized, who are the authorized signers on the account. And of course, the address, Social Security number. This is about all of the initial information that's obtained.
Is there any further information, things like how well they've paid their bills or if they have a mortgage on their house?
Usually not, no. No, we do have a question sometimes is asked, where did you previously do your banking? Which sometimes we verify, sometimes we don't.
Is it the same type of situation for the savings accounts as well?
Yes.
Who within the bank has access to these files?
Well, primarily it's the bookkeepers, customer service people who do the filing of the documents, the canceled checks, and the savings withdrawal and deposit tickets are filed.
What government agencies have access to these files if they needed them?
Well, the Internal Revenue sometimes sends us a summons. And actually, that's about the only agency that could come in direct and with a summons of some sort. Everything else is in general, general totals or general activity or things like that, but not related to the individual so much.
Could an individual request to see his or her own file?
Oh, yes, yes, mm-hmm. Yes, you mean the canceled checks from the time of the last statement to date or something like, yes, mm-hmm.
If there was a discrepancy or an inaccuracy in the file, could the individual make the correction or at least place their side of the story alongside the bank's in the file?
Definitely, definitely. This is what reconciling actually is, and we're here to help anybody reconcile their records that they maintain with the records that we maintain, and coming up to the precise penny reconciling is one of the services which we're trying to provide.
When an outside agency does, say the IRS, does take a look at someone's file, is a notation made in the file, or is the customer notified or consulted about this?
Well, the summons that usually is presented to us from IRS, the IRS usually has been in contact previously with that same individual.
If a government agency does come to see someone's file, what type of identification do you ask of them? And do you verify this identification when you do get it?
Yes, they have their picture identification and their the agency which they represent and what specific information they are requesting. That's all spelled out in the summons.
The federal law requires you to retain a copy of all checks over $100 for a period of 7 years. Do you find it easier to copy all the checks?
Yes. Yes, we copy all the checks. Microfilm all the checks.
What happens to the copies?
The microfilm itself, we maintain that in our permanent files.
Then what happens after 7 years? Do you keep the microfilm, or are the negatives destroyed after 7 years?
Well, in practice, we are maintaining well beyond 7 years because of the the amount of checks that we can put on microfilm, and it does not present that much of a storage problem.
Talking with George Black, the senior vice president at the First National Bank of DeKalb, I found a similar situation.
All checks go through the bank regardless of amount of money are put on microfilm, and they are kept for at least 7 years. I think our records go back for microfilming for probably 30 years.
So you never really destroy...
We really haven't destroyed any check files at all as far as microfilm is concerned, no.
Is it a matter of storage? You just haven't had to destroy them, or do you keep them for any purpose?
No purpose. Basically, it's more or less just that we have the storage, and as a result of that, we just don't get around to throwing them away.
It's more trouble to destroy them?
Microfilm, it's not much trouble to destroy them, but the initial documents, why, that's a problem. But every month, at the end of the month, all of our checking accounts, when we mail the statements out, all of the checks are mailed to the customer. But we do maintain microfilm of all checks, all deposits that go through the entire bank.
Who has access to those files of checks within your bank?
The access is to the people in the bookkeeping department, and any officer that would want to see any of the accounts and so forth can go down, pull the checks and look at them, yes. Mm-hmm.
Are they kept on a computer system?
The checks are put on a computer daily so that we get a daily printout of all the activity and the balance on every account, both saving, checking, and CDs of every account we have in the bank on a daily basis, yes.
What government officials would be able to look at these files if they came in?
Basically, the only one that be allowed to look at them is your IRS, and they do have the privilege of coming in and demanding to see checking account files.
What kind of identification do you require from them before you'll let them see the files?
Well, all of your Internal Revenue Service carry their own identifications, their printed cards with their pictures on them, and the majority of them are in and out of here so that we actually know them personally.
So you'd recognize them?
We basically recognize them, unless it was something out of the ordinary, and then usually they would always have one individual that had been in the bank before so that he would introduce them and we would cooperate.
So if someone came in and said, say, Joe Smith of the IRS sent me, I'm working with him on this case and he's busy, would you just send him down or would you call Joe?
No, he working with him, I mean, he would have to have his own credentials for the IRS, yes.
Will you then call the customer and notify him or her that someone's looking at the records?
We immediately notify the customer, yes. We think we owe the customer that. For the simple reason, just because Congress passed a law allowing the IRS to come in and look at these records, we don't feel that the customer should be kept in the dark that he isn't being checked upon.
What would you do if someone called your bookkeeping department, say, and asked for some information on a file? Perhaps they are a creditor, maybe a department store in the area who's missing some information on their credit card customer, wanted to know, say, Social Security number or some of that kind of information. Would you then just give that to the person calling and asking for it?
They have no privilege to any information that we have in the bank. The only privilege that they would have is if the individual had given them a check for $20, they could call in and say, Mary Joe here has given me a check for $20 and her account number is such and such, is the check good? We can tell them, yes, the check is good.
But now if they said, say, we have a... we're running a credit check on Mary Doe and want to check her Social Security number.
We would tell them to go through the credit bureau then, because the laws, while I'm not in the installment loan department, I do know something about it, but we don't run into that so much in the commercial lending up here as the installment loan officers do. But there's a lot of checking error, more on installment credit than on their other type of credit. But they insist that the information come through credit bureaus, and we don't give information out to any corporation or anyone like that is calling in. All requests have to be written. And many, many of the requests that come in are actually signed by the people. And when they've signed by the people, it's hard to give them the information. Then we give them the information. Otherwise, it's very, very minimal and very, very slim and basic information. We don't feel it is right for anyone to be able to check on anybody else's credit just for the sake of checking, or if they are extending credit to them, they should take the time to actually sit down with the people and take their own financial information and a financial statement and find out who they are rather than just issuing the credit and then worrying about it later.
So if they were to call from one of the department stores, say, and ask for someone's social security number, you would tell them it's your policy to not give it out and suggest they go through the credit bureau?
They should go through the credit bureau on that, yes. Mm-hmm.
This is bank policy that everyone is aware of in the bookkeeping department?
Yes, the bookkeeping department are probably more aware of than we are up here because of the uncertainty and them not knowing what the boundaries are. They give out very, very little information. If something comes up out of the ordinary, they inevitably will forward the call to a loan officer.
Do you know who has access to that file?
Just about everybody does.
I know who I think has access, but you never know because the government can get access to anything nowadays.
Probably anybody.
Probably my parents or anybody that's down in my book.
No, I don't. I really don't. That's kind of scary. I really don't know.
I've read that a lot of people do, but I'm really not too sure.
I would assume I just had the access.
Not really, I bet imagine there's a lot of people can get at it.
I know that anyone, right, can get to that information.
Probably anybody who cares to go in and take a look at it, but I don't really mind as long as I have access to my own file and I know what's there.
The banker's insistence that no record information is released to unauthorized individuals interested me. Professor Linos, chairperson of the Federal Commission on Credit and Privacy that I mentioned earlier, explains that personal information you tell banks and other institutions is not always kept confidential.
When you go to the bank, or when you go to your doctor, you tell them very personal things. If you're at a bank, you're negotiating for a loan, they want to know what your income is, how much your net worth is, who owes you money and how much you owe and what you expect to inherit and all these different things. That's all recorded. You expect that that's going to be kept confidential. That's our expectation of confidentiality. In practice, it is not. That information is passed around not only from bank to bank, but to credit card companies, to government officials, all without our knowledge, and all on an informal basis. For example, with credit cards, we decided to conduct a survey. I mean my privacy commission, in order to determine what type of qualifications a government official had to show in order to obtain this sensitive information. We found in 99% of the cases, when a person called and said he was a government official, and he asked for personal information from a credit card company, that information was given with no more attempted verification than that. Or he would just drop around for a visit and informally get that information. Neither you nor I would ever know that this information was being given out, nor is a record made of it. So the expectation of confidentiality is not there.
I decided to see for myself whether or not such information is easily passed on. I started with some basic but personal information, the Social Security number. Calling First National, I told the bookkeeping clerk that I was calling from a local store and wanted to check some information about a customer who had applied for a credit card. Reading information from a check supplied by a bank customer who cooperated for this experiment, I recited the name, address, and account number of the customer and asked for the Social Security number. The clerk checked with her supervisor, who gave permission, and, without asking for verification as to my identity and purpose, the clerk gave me the number. Now, you may think that number can be obtained anywhere, but that is not necessarily true. The DeKalb police have begun Operation Identification, as you may know, by engraving an identification number on all valuable possessions. That number is the driver's license number, not the Social Security number, because, as Lieutenant Kaiser of the University Police explains, the government considers that number to be privileged information.
Social Security office will not furnish information concerning a Social Security number unless it comes down to a point of asking for identification of a individual that has deceased.
So they figure the Social Security number is somehow privileged information?
Yes. And it has become privileged information, as you see that it's no longer, you know, obtained on the driver's license and things. It comes under the Privacy Act, from my understanding. I couldn't explain that for sure, what, you know, on what way. But all I do know is that it is considered under the Privacy Act of privileged information.
What do you do if you want the Social Security number?
We ask the individual. Ask the individual's permission to copy down the Social Security number.
Even though they give you the driver's license ahead of time, you have to ask to copy that particular number?
Right.
Remembering that Mr. Black had described an elaborate policy for requesting such information, I told him how easily I had obtained the Social Security number.
They shouldn't be doing that at all. If it was done, I was not aware of it, and I don't think that our head bookkeeper was aware of it either. Of course, on the other hand, as far as the Social Security number, is nothing more than a name, and I can't see where that does any harm as far as a person's Social Security number. Whether it's I'm George Black and I have a Social Security number, it doesn't make any difference if someone knows my Social Security number or not. For their records, maybe they're building their credit files also, but I don't know what the incident was in reality. It seems funny to me that so many people today, I think, are attaching so much importance upon their invasion of privacy. Basically, if a person is basically honest, what difference does it make if anyone knows their name and their Social Security number? Like you say, you are concerned about the ease with which a Social Security number is given out, but we've got to face it. We are all numbers today. Names mean nothing. The other thing, as far as building our credit files, anyone who builds a credit file, the individual can come in and say, I want to see my credit file, whether I'm a bank official or an individual. I'm not showing a great, probably an undue concern about it. But as a bank official, I don't think it should be given out. But I'm also saying if it has been given out, it shouldn't be given out. I'm not recommending that it should be given out. There are times that it happens, but I mean, the thing is that there's a lot of things that goes on from individuals, and we never know about it. Now, if we knew, that is, if I knew at least, I certainly would have taken it up at an office meeting. If this is our procedure, is this our practice? And I certainly will now, as to whether or not this is our procedure. If someone calls in, do we give them a Social Security number out? And if we do, why do we give it to them? It's no one's business, unless they are running some check or something on it. But I can't see why we would be condemned for maybe a teller, or not a teller, wouldn't be a teller, she wouldn't have access to it. Bookkeeping, it would be. And the bookkeeping department, why they would take and give someone a Social Security number just on a phone conversation. But I will bring this up at an office meeting as to and have the head bookkeeper down there find out who it is, because actually the best way to thwart anything like that when someone is asking for information that is different, it's like I would say to you right now, are you married? Presumably you say, well, what do you want to know for? That stops it right there. I mean, well, it doesn't make any difference as far as the teller operation. They shouldn't be giving out Social Security numbers. To me, I'm probably contradicting myself in this respect, that my feelings in security of the bank. Security of the bank is that they shouldn't give out Social Security numbers, and I certainly will check through and follow through on it to find out who did it, whether I can find out or not, it'll be something else or not, but why did they do it more than anything else? Just because they were asked for a Social Security number doesn't mean they should give it to them. I mean, there's no reason why they should give it to them.
Mr. Black feels the Social Security number is unimportant. You already heard Lieutenant Kaiser explain that the government doesn't agree, but if you are a student, you may not be convinced. After all, as your student number, you release that information daily. But that number is a link to vast amounts of information about you. Your educational records, employment records, financial and medical records are all filed with that number. The Social Security number can be just what is needed to convince a clerk, nurse, politician, or police officer to turn over their records. Just as I was able to impress the bookkeeper at the bank that I deserved a Social Security number just because I had the customer's address and account number, perhaps the addition of a Social Security number could convince the university that I deserved to see employment records, or the local clinic that I should see medical records. Well, I didn't try, of course. I'm an amateur at this game and could only carry my experiment this far. But Professor Linos explains that there are experts who work at obtaining information.
Companies exist for over 25 years who do impersonate physicians and nurses and even a cleric, and that's how they obtain the information. One spokesman for one of the three largest investigative reporting companies testified before us, rather proudly, interestingly enough, to explain how he works.
Evidently, Mr. Black was somewhat concerned, as he did take the matter to yesterday's officers' meeting.
Well, all we have to do is take and reissue the instructions to the people again. They were not, none of them were under the idea that any of this information was being given out. And who gave it out on that, we can't put our finger on it or why it was given out. But, I mean, we are going to take and yet today we will take and give a directive to the head bookkeeper, Mr. Butler, that no information to be given out, and they're going to tighten it up some more. It's a difficult situation, and it's someone that we just can't figure out why anyone would want a Social Security number, and if it did, the other thing, we can't really understand why anyone would give it out. But we did bring that up this morning at our meeting. Well, it was, we got on the agenda about 8:30, and it was thoroughly discussed. And that is the position we've taken, that we just have to go back to our booking department and tell them the girls. And it's surprising, unless it was some new girl down there, because all the girls down there are old enough at that not to give any information out like that.
So now you remember I told you they got permission from someone. They checked with someone else before they did it. I don't know.
Well, I don't know what the situation was. I don't know the exact situation and as to who requested it and why they requested it. But if it was given out, it was given out. Mm-hmm. But I still think that most any information can be gotten one way or another by hook or by crook if someone is really making an effort to do it.
So
but
now
we make every effort we can not to give out any information at all, and that's not the way it is. Mm-hmm.
So now it will be a written policy and no one will get that information from you?
Well, being a written policy doesn't mean that it can't possibly happen again. We certainly hope it doesn't happen again, and we're going to have a written policy that for it not to happen again. But you can issue all the directives you want. And when it comes down to it, I mean, if someone breaks that, there's nothing, just a written directive does not stop it. I mean, we certainly don't want it to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll do everything we possibly can to see that it doesn't happen. We feel that we have always been tough. We get very little information out. Anyone that wants any credit information has to be written, and it has to be signed by the individual who is authorizing us to give this information to. Any people, such as the Kmart and different stores, Eagles, and especially food stores where there people want check cashing privileges. And then the information we give them is when the account was opened, whether it's a satisfactory account. That's about all they ask.
I must add at this point that the methods I employed, as well as the techniques of the professionals, are legal. We all know that impersonating a police officer is a criminal offense, but there are no laws against presenting yourself as a nurse, a banker, or other professional. A problem at the root of privacy abuse is the amount of unnecessary information that is obtained. Again, Professor Linnows.
The major thrust we'd like to see is that you don't collect data you don't need, only relevant data.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't collect it, you are saving a tremendous cost. Every time you respond to questions on an application form, if that's going to be used at all, that has to be transposed into something.
Right.
And you multiply that by tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of millions, that's very costly. But if you don't really need that data to make the decision why I collect it, it's only been very recent years, the last 3 or 4 years, that people have begun to assert themselves that they won't give up information, especially women or blacks or minority groups and the like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason we have, as one of our recommendations, that an organization should only be permitted to collect data that is relevant to make that decision. If you're going in for a check cashing card, it's difficult for me to see why they have to know where you lived 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And ordinarily they'll say, where do you live today? Where was your previous residence? And where was your residence before that? And who's your present employer? And the like.
Mm-hmm.
So that information does come in. And basically, the interests of the organization, say a bank in this instance, and the individual really run in parallel. You don't want to give up any more information than you have to. And an organization, a bank, should not collect more information than it needs because it's costly to collect that data.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is it falls into a data bank. It becomes a very rich source of material.
Wondering what the situation is in this area, I collected some credit card applications. I was concerned to find requests for the names of landlords, both current and past, closest relatives, and previous employers. When I called a number of businesses to ask why this information is requested, I was told that it is never used, but serves as backup information in case the customer leaves no forwarding address. Many people told me that if I left those spaces blank, it might take a little longer, but I probably would not be denied a credit card. Experimenting again, I found this was true. I applied for a check cashing card at a local discount store, ignoring most of the blanks on the form. With only my name, address, driver's license number, and a fabricated phone number, my card was in the mail within a week.
How do you feel about the trend toward picture and fingerprint identification for cashing checks?
Now, in a way, it seems like it infringes on my rights, but I can see their point of view, too, because they're the ones that have to pay for all the bad checks. So I guess it works both ways. If you have to do it, you're going to have to.
I think it's pretty good. If you're really not sure about anything, I guess, especially for the businesses, if they're not sure about you know, who you're taking money from or getting checks and all this other stuff from, then it's a good catch-all.
It's better for the store owner, for liability, I guess, whatever it's called.
Do you feel it invades your privacy at all?
Yeah, to a certain extent, knowing that my fingerprints are on record somewhere. But I could see both sides, you know, the store owners and my side of it.
Well, if they got to do it, you know. I mean, they're protecting themselves. I don't like it, though.
Do you feel it invades your privacy?
Yeah, fingerprinting, yeah. Picture IDs don't bother me at all.
Do you feel it invades your privacy at all?
No, not at all.
I think it's a good idea here because a lot of people, they're, you know, especially they're doing it now in Chicago, I know that. And I think it's a good idea to, especially for identification purposes, to have your photo on an ID, you know.
Do you feel it's an invasion of your privacy at all?
No, I never really considered that one.
I feel it's a pain.
Do you feel it invades your privacy?
Yeah, it's like an inconvenience.
In the area of unnecessary information, perhaps the most serious offense involves the fingerprinters and the businesses that employ the PhotoPak system. Willie Brown, the manager of the Sycamore Kmart, explains how that system works.
Well, you take the driver's license and a charge card and the check, and you lay it underneath the machine. And the machine have a watch on it, and you also stamp the check.
So
Then you snap the picture.
So you don't take a picture of the person writing the check, just of the identification?
It takes a picture of the person, too.
Under what circumstances do you do that?
On most checks, that's okay to the service desk.
That's standard for any amount?
Right.
Is that a chain policy? Do all Kmart stores do that, or is that your store's policy?
It's not a chain policy, but most Kmarts use it.
What happens to the negatives of those pictures, either in the case where a check clears the bank or when you have a bad check?
Really couldn't tell you. We don't even take them out. If somebody from Microcheck take them out. And the only reason they ever use, if there's a bad check, they come back and we would like to know who wrote the bad check. So by having the number on the bad check, they could get the negative of that same number and it would match up with the photo, the time it was written.
So do they give it to you for you to collect, or do you turn it over to an agency, or what happens then?
No, we collect. We try to collect.
What do you do if a customer decides they don't want their picture taken?
Well, we never run across that. If they didn't want it taken, then we probably wouldn't okay to check.
Do you think that taking people's picture like that is any kind of an invasion of privacy? Do you think that, or has any one of your customers complained about it?
I don't think it is. Nobody complained about it. I've never known anybody complain about it.
If someone were to say that they could guarantee the check, they had their identification, invited you to call the bank, but said they just didn't want their picture taken, would you accept that invasion of privacy as an argument?
No, if they didn't want it taken, then you never can tell it due to the situation, you know. It's a judgment you have to make at that time or when that happened. There's no standard procedure.
Yet there is no evidence that this helps deter bad checks, according to Brown.
I don't know if it works or not, really. I'm sure it would work to an extent that if somebody's writing bad checks, you know what the person looked like. You know, if I write one, and you got my picture, and I show up, you know, at another store, or back at the same store, you know, that's the person that wrote the bad check. I imagine it helps.
In fact, Brown asserts that bad checks aren't even a problem at his store.
Do you have a lot of trouble with bad checks?
No.
Why bother with the complicated method of taking the pictures and everything? Or do you think that's part of the reason why you don't have a lot of trouble?
Well, as I said, we do what we think is necessary to protect us. And basically, that's what it's all about.
So you think that camera thing helps keep down the bad checks, then? That must be it?
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe it helps and maybe it doesn't. You never can tell if you don't know. There's no way you could really tell. It's just there for like I said, if you get a bad check, you know, you actually can get the picture of the person that actually wrote it.
A clerk estimates that 2,000 photos can be stored on microfilm at once. Just as an unauthorized individual can collect written information, pictures of you shopping at various stores can provide a useful profile. Some area businesses have avoided this problem and cut down on their expenses by using a phony camera. This scares those who use rubber checkbooks while saving the storekeepers the expense of microfilm equipment.
Well, I don't mind it. Like, if they need it, I guess, to find the people that aren't paying.
Do you feel it's an invasion of your privacy at all?
It depends. If they throw it into a computer, yeah. But if it's just used for that purpose, then I guess not.
Yeah, a little extreme. A picture maybe, but not fingerprints.
I guess that might be one of the hazards for the convenience of checking. I don't know. I don't have a checking account, so it doesn't really matter to me. But I suppose if you're going to have a checking account, you're going to have to put up with something.
Taking your picture to cash a check? I think it's terrible.
Why is that?
Because, that's not the point of checks. It's, you know, you shouldn't have to sign your life away to write a check. A check is a businessman's credit.
Don't you feel that the banks have a right to protect themselves, though?
Oh, yeah, so do the businesses. But if they want to protect themselves, don't offer the service.
Kmart's manager may not know why he uses the system, but Microcheck representative Scott Duff has some ideas.
See, the main function of the camera and or taking a picture is to deter people from even attempting to cash the check, a bad check. So, in essence, 80% of the camera and the picture concept is deterrent. But in case the deterrent value of the camera fails, then it supplies the customer with a picture of the person and their check and their identification, which is legal evidence in a court of law.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Do you have any facts, statistics, or anything showing the difference before your system was instituted and then afterward?
No, nothing compiled like that.
Just people tell you that it works?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a fact we wouldn't have as many big-name customers as we have if it wasn't true.
Do you feel that this at all invades the privacy of a person writing a check? Do you have very many people complain about that?
No. It's the person who complains the most is the one that's going to rip somebody off anyhow. If a guy comes into a store and says, you know, I want to cash his check, and the gal goes, okay, and then she goes through everything, and then she gets up to the point where she takes a picture, the fella usually, you know, starts ranting and raving, saying, what are you going to do, take my picture? Cripes sake, what kind of chip joint is this? And where's the manager and all this? Well, at that point, you immediately know he's got something to hide.
You're sure that that's the only time anyone would resent having their picture taken?
Well, you may find a little old lady here or there that, I mean, it's never 100%, but I've been in this business years and years, and we have never, you can call any of our customers, had an occasion where someone, you know, had a conniption fit about having their picture taken.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, you know, the ladies, you know, they'll just say, oh, wait a second, let me get my lipstick out. Let me comb my hair. It's a big joke. I mean, no one ever sees the pictures anyhow.
What happens to the negatives for those pictures?
Okay, we keep them on file here.
For how long?
For 3 years.
3 years, and then you destroy them?
Right.
Do you have them in it, like a data bank, or are they on microfilm?
They're on microfilm, and they're like a library, film library. So in the event, let's say, Kmart calls up and asks for a picture a year ago, we can go to that film and pull that specific picture and send it to them.
Mm-hmm. So you keep them for 3 years. Is there anyone who has access to that film?
No. In fact, if you were to call up saying that you were the FBI and you wanted that picture, we still wouldn't give it to you.
What identification do you require from the Kmart person? Or you just, if they ask on the phone, you mail it right to the Kmart store?
Well, let's say we've got this form, which only the stores have.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is they fill out all the pertinent information, such as the day it was cashed, the amount of the check, the name of the person, the bank it was drawn on. So, you know, without that form, without that information, you know, you're up the creek.
If a customer wanted to get their own negative back after their check cleared the bank, would they be able to get it back?
Sure.
Would they have to just write to you and then they could have it?
they'd probably have to write to the store, and then the store would call us, and then we'd send it to the store, and the store would send it to them.
So you'd require the store's cooperation?
Right.
Does that happen very often?
No.
Has it ever happened?
Not as long as I've been here.
But you would do it if somebody asked
you?
Oh,
sure, sure.
Uh-huh. About how many, well, in this area, let's say, about how many of those machines do you have?
In the Chicagoland area?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'd say 300 or 400.
I'm sure that Duff is sincere in his assertion that his company will not release photos to anyone other than their clients. However, I'm not so ready to trust the hundreds of store owners who might be too busy to verify the credentials of those seeking photos. It is helpful to know that a customer can request his or her own photo after the check has cleared the bank, however, as long as the store owners cooperate. The potential for privacy abuse will be greatly magnified with the installation of the electronic fund transfer system. Professor Linos explains how it works.
Under electronic fund transfer, each person is issued a debit card. You go to the store, takes your debit card, and automatically your bank account is charged and the store's bank account is credited for the amount of the purchase. But not only is the amount so revealed, but the item. So you get the name of the book, the kind of drugs you bought in a drugstore, any other type of thing you buy, would be entered into this data bank. Now, when this is fully operational, as it will, I would predict in maybe 10 years, you're going to have necessarily the equivalent of a centralized data bank for the whole country, because you would be able to go into a city, any place in the country, into any store, give them your debit card, and your bank account, no matter where it is, would be charged, and that store's bank account, no matter where it is, would be credited. Now, when you have, under one jurisdiction, that kind of detail on a person, and when you keep in mind, if you ever want to profile on a person, just get his financial history, where he gets his money from and where and how he spends it, this becomes extremely sensitive and very vulnerable.
Although no bank has been using the EFT in this area, DeKalb-Skisi explains they are interested in the system.
Well, I think every bank in the area, in the whole state, is very much aware and trying to keep on top of the progress that EFT is coming.
What measures will ensure the security of the personal or financial information that would be contained in the EFT data bank?
Well, of course, this information is going to be in computer banks throughout the whole state. You know, if, for instance, on EFI, Electronic Funds Illinois, and that primarily is just going to be a check verification service at this point initially.
A dispute surrounds the EFT system because of the vast amounts of information that will be stored. With access to this information, a complete financial profile can be drawn up on any person in the country. Two federal commissions are currently arguing this point, Linos Privacy Protection Study Commission and the National Commission on Electronic Fund Transfers. The Privacy Commission is leery of governmental involvement, while the EFT Commission would like the Federal Reserve to operate as a clearinghouse for the EFT payments, with information available only through a court order. The general consensus is that the electronic fund transfer system is inevitable. Probably within the next 10 years, all purchases will be made instantaneously. As for the security of the information it will generate into its central data bank, we can only hope that someone will think of how to protect it from misuse, although today there is no such guarantee. In light of the potential for abuse of your credit information, I leave you with two courses of action. First, be cautious with your personal information. If you don't give it out, it can't be abused. Don't hesitate to question entries on credit applications. Many times, the information isn't really needed at all. Second, write to your representatives in Congress. I talked with Jay Meisenhalder, a legislative assistant to Representative Tom Corcoran, and he explained the legislation involving privacy.
Right now, there are 10 bills that deal with privacy and various aspects of the Privacy Protection Commission's report. Those bills run consecutively from H.R. 8279 to H.R. 8288. And the primary House sponsors of this legislation are Congressman Barry Goldwater, Jr. from California and Congressman Edward Koch of New York. And tomorrow, that is November the 2nd, they plan to introduce two more bills to cover still more sections of this report. The bills cover everything from educational records to credit bureaus, medical records, employment records, and various aspects of the Fair Credit Reporting Act of 1974.
So what's the general consensus about the bills? Are they arousing a lot of talk?
Well, I think a lot of people who are familiar with this think that it's going to be one of those issues that is going to be, it's going to generate a lot of debate. It's going to be one of the issues that you can't avoid, that you're going to have to take a position on, and that nobody is going to be able to please everybody with. No matter which way you go on this, I think there are going to be people that are offended, that are upset with the outcome of it.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything specifically dealing with the electronic fund transfer system?
Right. Well, the electronic fund transfer system right now, the Federal Reserve System is very, very much interested in making sure that if there is electronic fund transfer, that they have it. Because right now they have kind of an involvement, because they are required to okay checks, so to speak, from one bank to another and to approve them. And they're worried that if they don't have control of electronic fund transfer, that this will kind of shove them a little bit further out into right field. And one of the sections of the Privacy Commission report talks about the technology and privacy, and there is legislation that would put some controls on who has access to this information, where it's stored, what rights an individual has to decide who gets that information. One of the problems is the fact that it is relatively easy for someone who is an extremely knowledgeable person in the field of computers to tap into a computer system. I think that's one of the things that has to be worked out. The basic thrust of the legislation that's been introduced so far, there are five things that it would do. First of all, it would mandate that people be informed that these systems exist to disseminate this information. Secondly, it would give you a legally insured right to have a relationship with that information. In other words, it would ensure your proprietary interest in the information. Mm-hmm. It would provide you copies of the information at a reasonable cost to make sure that the companies didn't lose money and didn't have to bear a huge financial burden providing copies. It would give you the legal right to correct errors in information pertaining to you, and the right to stop the dissemination of that information,
mm-hmm.
whether it's accurate or not.
Corcoran is ill this week, recovering from a recent appendectomy. However, Meisenhalder assures me that he will look into this matter when he is well. So this is a good time to let your feelings about credit and privacy be known. Write to Corcoran, U.S. Representative, 15th District, at 1107 Longworth House Office Building, Washington, D.C., 20515. Again, that's 1107 Longworth House Office Building, Washington, D.C., 20515. This is an important issue, but unless you keep it visible, it can be buried. Write today. I'd like to thank all of the people who cooperated for this program: Professor David Linos, George Black, George Giese, Scott Duff, Willie Brown, and Jay Meisenhalder. Next week, the discussion of credit and privacy continues with an interview with Professor Linos, chairperson of the Federal Privacy Protection Study Commission. Have a pleasant week.
Listening to Radiophile. Join host Marge Halpern each week at this time for a look at issues touching our community.